Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Curtis Preston, the chief technical architect at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Druva. They're based out of Sunnyvale, California. Curtis, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started.
No problem.
Yeah, we looked up your bio, you know, on LinkedIn on the web. You seem to have a very rich and historical background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some of the highlights of your career?
Well, I, you know, as we discussed, I sort of operate on a portion of security, right, which is data protection. And been doing that for about 25 years. I worked at what at that time was the second largest credit card company in the U.S., had about $35 billion in receivables, which is the way you count such a company. And I was the backup guy. Left there, went into consulting, and basically ended up consulting with a number of large companies on designing and implementing their backup systems, and ended up writing the book the books on the subject for O'Reilly, and most recently now I'm at Druva.
So, how many books did you publish?
It was a total of three, although technically one of them is kind of a rewrite of the first one. But it was my first book was called Unix Backup and Recovery back in 2000 is when that was first published. I was literally editing that as we were helping at that time. I was working at Intuit, which is the makers of QuickBooks and such. We were working on Y2K, and so my book was released. I guess actually technically it was released in 1999 because it was released just before Y2K. And then I also wrote Using SANS and NAS. And then the follow-up book was just Backup and Recovery, so we expanded it beyond just Unix.
Mm-hmm. Sounds excellent. I mean, I congratulate you. I know writing a book can be a difficult process. So how did you venture into Druva? Is this a company that you kind of helped create?
No, Druva has been around. It still technically qualifies as a startup, but it's been around for several years. And they were looking for somebody to do, what we call influence marketing or evangelism, or specifically on the technical side. And so they were looking. Oddly enough, they were looking for someone like me, and they reached out to me to see if I knew anyone like me that was interested. and I said, well, hey, yes, I know someone that's a lot like me that would be interested in such a position. It's actually, for what it's worth, it's my first time actually working at a vendor, right? Either a software, hardware, or in this case, a service vendor.
Now, obviously, you're the name of your company has some significance to it. Is there a deeper meaning behind what Druva means?
Yeah, there definitely is. The Druva is in Sanskrit. Druva means the North Star. So, we're trying. When we first started, so the idea of like leading the way, right? When we first started the company, we were kind of the only game in town in terms of this idea of cloud native data protection of any kind. And now, we're still, a minority in that idea. And so the idea is that, leading the way to a cloud native way of doing data protection and data management.
Okay. Now, how long has Druva been in business?
I think it's over 9 years. I'm not exactly sure of the exact number of years, but I believe it's over 9 years.
Okay. That's a good amount of time. Now, does Druva have a presence in other countries as well, other than just the United States?
Yes. This might not be what your question is aimed at, but our development is done in Pune in India, but we also have sales and marketing offices in the EU and the UK. We're looking at, you know, looking at other markets as well, but right now the main focus is the US and then the EU and the UK.
Okay, sounds excellent. Sounds like you have a good international reach right there. In fact, my origins are Indian. My parents were from Pune, so I've been there like maybe 15 years ago.
Gotcha.
So, now, who's your typical customer base like that you're trying to target? Is it the small to medium-sized business, the larger companies like the Fortune 500, or is it a combination of these two?
So it's we have a product for almost everyone. One thing that's easy to say who isn't our target, and that is this is a courtesism. I call it a TSB, a truly small business, which is smaller than an SMB. A truly small business is like, you know, three people, right? That is not our target market, and not that our product wouldn't work for them, but that, you know, just the processes and stuff that we have are not for a company of that size. It you need a more sort of consumer-facing approach, I think, for that, you know, and full self-automation of sales and all that kind of stuff, right? So start focusing when we have a couple of different products. One of our products works with is sort of seat based or number of user based. And I know that, you know, we started around 10 or 20 users would be like the smallest that we go, but that product, we have customers, we have Fortune 500, we have Fortune 10 companies that are using our product to back up their end user data. I think our largest organization has over 10 petabytes of data with us. It's well over 10. That's just the last time I checked the number. And I know that they've got well over 100,000 seats of users. That's on the end user side. On the data center side, I'd say the sweet spot is that the SMB and the middle enterprise. And then when we start looking at the enterprise customers, because of how our model works, the easy sell for an enterprise customer is going to be things like remote sites, end user data. Given our model, we're not the product for a company that's got, you know, 10 petabytes in a single data center. That just doesn't work with our model. But we do have a product to sell them. It's just we won't be backing up their core data center.
Now, how large is Druva, both from an employee and revenue standpoint, if you can share that information?
We don't share revenue number, but I can tell you that we've got over 4,000 customers and over 100 petabytes of data under management. And I can also mention that we are in the top five companies that are using Amazon storage. So our entire model runs in AWS, and all of our customer data is stored in S3. And so as a result, we end up being in the top five number of companies that use that data.
Wow. Sounds excellent. Now, let's get into your product and service lines. It looks like that Druva has distinct lines in data protection, information governance, another business initiative. Then you get your cloud technology platform, the Druva in Sync, Druva Phoenix, and Druva Cloud Ranger. Can you kind of give us an overview of all products, services, and get into a little bit more depth with them, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first and longest running product that we have is called In Sync. And the name comes from, I think, sort of an early idea of actually synchronizing data between things. But it is aimed at the end user world, right? So it will do laptop backup, mobile device backup, including Android and iPhone, and also user. If you think about it, there are a lot of cloud SaaS offerings that are user based. So Office 365, Google, G Suite, Salesforce. These are all sort of seat based services. So we offer data protection for those, seat-based services, right? And so all of that data then gets, and then that product, given that it's been around a while, and also given sort of the needs of that market, we have a lot of governance and discovery and legal hold and all kind of features on that product. Again, A, given its age, and also given the needs of that market, right? Some ransomware detection, things like that. And a very simple single button legal hold, right? So an administrator of the system can go in and with a single click put a user on legal hold, and then all their data is held indefinitely until you tell us otherwise. Then the second product is newer, but not, I wouldn't consider it new anymore. It's now a few years old. It is Phoenix, which is data center backup and recovery and data management, right? So the idea here is that we're going to be backing up, or we are backing up VMware, Hyper-V, Linux and Windows servers, and then a few different database products, right? We handle SQL Server, and we're on EA now with Oracle. And so the idea is that that the data center is backed up to our cloud platform, again, running in AWS. And then the third product is Cloud Ranger. And Cloud Ranger is a service for those that want to use the native data protection tools available to them in AWS. So if you've used AWS, you know that each of the various products like EC2 offers this idea of snapshots, right? So, and what they mean when they say snapshots is an S3 image, either a full or an incremental of your EC2 VM, right? They offer it for a number of services for their, RDS, for example, or a number of their database services. They offer this. The challenge, if you're, more than a handful of servers, is managing scheduling, making sure those snapshots happen at the appropriate intervals, and then managing and expiring, most importantly, expiring those images after they've reached what you consider to be an expiration point. So the Cloud Ranger product is designed to do all of that, and just basically you set up just like you would with a sort of a typical data protection product. It's you specify how often, what your RTO and your RPO are, and you specify where your retention period is, and we just manage all of that for the customer. And that the Cloud Ranger product, all of these products, the thing that sort of is the same across all of these products is that they are 100% cloud native, which means that we live in and are designed for the cloud. In this case, AWS is where we have chosen to live. And it means that our customers never see backup servers. They never pay for backup servers. And what it does is it allows us to offer the entire service, 100% service-based, right? Service-based pricing based on on-demand use of the product, either the number of seats that you're using on the end user side or the number of gigabytes of S3 that you're taking up after deduplication and all of that, right? So that's sort of our customers don't have to install backup servers. They don't have to manage backup servers as VMs in the cloud the way they do with our competitors' products. It's just, I like to say that we are to backup what Salesforce is to CRM, right? You just use Salesforce, right? You don't really know or care about all of the infrastructure that has to happen in the background to make Salesforce be what it is. You just need to pay for the number of seats that you're using. That's exactly the way it is with our product.
Okay. So your architecture primarily is the Amazon Web Services then, right?
Yeah, that's where our technology runs in our AWS account.
Okay. Sounds excellent. Now, what kinds of customers have used your services?
That's literally, when you look at our hero slide, it's just across the board, right? The beautiful thing about data protection, data management is all different companies have data, right? There are certain types of data that might not work well with a, if you create, you know, petabytes of data in a day that's new and unique to your environment, that's not going to deduplicate very well and subsequently isn't going to work well with a cloud-based data protection model. But other than that, actually it would as long as you had enough bandwidth, but, you know, you might find the bandwidth problematic, right? And so, we've got literally companies in every major vertical that I can think of. So there's no, you know, no one that sort of jumps right out.
Sure. Now, what kind of work has Druva done with ransomware? As we know, it's like one of the latest and one of the bigger cyber threats that are out there. Can you kind of elaborate more on that?
Yeah. So, I'll put a disclaimer. We're not a first line of defense ransomware type product, right? We are sort of the second, you know, we're the next line of defense. And that is that we have a unique vantage point. If we're running, this is specifically on the end user product side. If we're running on all your laptops or all your mobile phones or in your, you know, Salesforce or Office 365, we have this sort of unique vantage point of all your data. And we have some AI that's watching data patterns. And if we see certain patterns happening that are symptomatic, a ransomware attack, we can actually stop that from spreading any further, and we can notify you so that you can then begin remediation, right? And that's happening, again, we're second, you know, we're the second line of defense, so this is happening the next time you do a backup. Now, most of our end user customers, that backup is actually happening throughout the day. Literally, you know, as I'm speaking, I'm looking over at my Mac and I'm seeing, you know, every few minutes, I'm seeing the little Druva, you know, backup starting. And that's literally the extent of the impact of, on the footprint, to the customers, that they're just going to see that little thing telling them that their backup is starting. But if it's happening throughout the day, we can notice patterns that happen, and again, we can notify you and help you remediate it immediately.
Okay. Now, in the headlines, there have been recent reports of Chinese infiltration into the AWS servers, and even with Apple, I guess they're up their servers, with these miniature surveillance cameras. Can you elaborate on how your services can actually protect a client while they're on the AWS?
Yeah, so I think the question here is, you know, we are a data protection and data management company, right? So what our job is to make sure that the data that they're storing with us is immutable, you know, because that's what a hacker, you know, from our perspective, the part of the world that we're worried about a hacker hacking the backup, right? So the first thing, you know, to mention is that there are a number of different things that we do, from encryption to, you know, we use AES-256 encryption on the data itself, but then we have a number of different levels of protection to it. And let me back up. So, you know, all of the data for any customer is stored in at least three locations. We have a number of levels of protection that are watching for any changes in that data that weren't governed by us, right? You know, having said all of that, we are as interested in, you know, when that Chinese story hit, I think every data center in the world wondered exactly what that meant, right? And so, you know, we're looking into that. We're looking into making sure we protect against that. But again, we already have the protections in place to make sure that the part of the security world that we're worried about, which is making sure that the copy of your data that we are responsible for stays yours and stays what you gave us, right? So we, for example, we don't have access to your data, right? The data is encrypted before it leaves whatever device, whether it's a server, an application, you know, a SaaS app, or a laptop or a mobile device. It's encrypted before it leaves the device, and we use an envelope encryption mechanism, and so we never see the unencrypted data. And you know, one of the best examples of that is, you know, one question that we get when people come on board is, you know, how many administrators should I have? And, you know, our quick answer is more than one, because if you lose your administrative password and there's only one of them, you've just lost all your data. We have no way to get your data back if you've lost that, you know, if you only had one and then you lost it, right? So we, given the envelope and system, the envelope encryption system that we have, you can have, you know, a number of different accounts, and any one of those can be designated the appropriate person. But I just described that to just illustrate how, like I said, how that we have zero access to your data.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Now, GDPR compliance is starting to become a big issue both here in the U.S. and Europe. Do you have your services that are targeted towards that to help your customers that come into compliance?
So, yes, and I appreciate very much how you asked that question. Some people would say, you know, is your product GDPR compliant? There is no such thing as a GDPR compliant. There's a product that helps you comply with GDPR, which is something very different. So I appreciate, first off, the way you asked that question. And the quick answer to that question is yes, right? We were aware of GDPR as it was, you know, as it was going along. We certainly followed it very closely. We have a European presence, and we have, you know, we have our you know, we have all of the appropriate rules set. So we've made sure that we, as a company, that's the first thing to say. We've made sure that we, as a company, are complying as much as we can with GDPR. So when we get things like you know, the discovery requests or the right to be forgotten requests, that we can comply with those as a company. And then as a, it's been a while since I looked at the GDPR terms, that I do not advertise myself as a GDPR specialist, but there's the term of, is it data manager? If it, you know, given that we hold on to other people's data, whatever the GDPR term for that is, it's escaping me at the moment.
Data custodian maybe, or?
Yeah, data custodian. There you go. So, you know, given that we are a data custodian, we have to also do our best to assist our customers. And we could be, like, we could actually be a multiple-level data custodian, right? So we're holding on to data on behalf of someone else who's holding on behalf of data for someone else, right? And so we're just one chain in that process. And so we need to make sure that we do our best to help comply. So the best answers that we have in the GDPR space are, you know, we help to make sure basically everything I said just a few minutes ago, right? To make sure that if you do give us data to hold on to, we will hold on to it, and we will make sure that it's immutable, and we will make sure that, you know, when you ask for it back, we can easily give it back to you, and we can demonstrate that we gave back to you what you gave to us, right? That's a big part of GDPR, because GDPR is sort of a two-faced approach, right? One is making sure that my data that I gave to you is, you know, if you've got my medical records, I want you to make sure you hold on to my medical records, right? So that's one side of it. But then there's the other little bit more privacy-focused aspect, and also, by the way, part of that aspect is to make sure that no one else, right, to make sure you get the data that we're taking care of for you, and also to make sure that no one else gets it, right? So we're, you know, beefing up a number of things like role-based authentication and other things like that to make sure that that no one else gets access to the data, right? The most difficult thing, I think, for any, you know, we call ourselves data management. When you look at the backup aspect, the backup and recovery aspect, any backup and recovery company is going to have a challenge with the right to be forgotten. I've blogged about this quite a bit. Basically, it's a little bit like blockchain, right? So blockchain is designed not to forget anything. And how do you use blockchain on something that and then have right to be forgotten? Backup by design is meant to hold on to stuff. It's not meant to, for you know, to forget stuff. Having said that, we've put some aspects into the some right to be forgotten aspects into the product. So, like we can help you search for certain files of certain types to contain certain data, and then get rid of those files both on the production side and in the backup copy. That's as far as we've gone so far. The real challenge for, again, any backup and recovery type product is going to be we're all sort of awaiting some further guidance from the, you know, the commission. And the question is getting rid of, if I've got, let's say I'm using Oracle and in my Oracle database is your email address and phone number and address. And then you've decided, and let's just also assume for the purpose of this discussion that we no longer have a business reason to keep that information. And you have asked us to get rid of it. How do I get rid of a single record in an Oracle database in a backup? There's just no, right now, there's no, it's just asking backup to do too much, right? And so we have that same challenge that all of the backup products have. And we are anxiously awaiting some further guidance from the commission, who has said they are going to provide such guidance. Specifically, the question is, can, you know, is it okay to say, like, well, we've deleted it out of the production copy. It will no longer be used for decision making or marketing or whatever. It happens to be in the backup, and then we've put in place another system. So if we ever restore an old version of Oracle, we have a process for getting rid of the stuff that we were supposed to forget. Right? It's a really complicated mess. So the short answer is, yes, we are helping customers comply with GDPR. The long answer is there's a long way to go, and sure, all of the backup type companies are going to have the same problem.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a complex issue. I think compliance in any regard, companies these days in general, is a complex thing. Now, Shifting gears here, can you share any customer success stories that have used your product and services, or in other words, do you have any, like, testimonials or case studies that you can elaborate on a little bit more?
There are a bunch. Actually, we have an entire case study section. There's a company, I think a couple of them that come to mind. We had a sort of two companies, and unfortunately their names are escaping my mind at the moment, but two really interesting stories. One is we had one company that came to us, and they were already a customer. They were already backing up thousands of laptops. And they came to us, and they were a pharmaceutical company. And they said, our boss, and it was a pharmaceutical company whose name you would recognize. And they came to us and said, we've read one too many article on ransomware, and so we'd like to back up all of our laptops. And we're like, okay, you know, who doesn't say yes to that, right? And they said, well, it's over 100,000, and any other backup company then need to start designing new backup servers, right? You're going to back up 100,000 new laptops. You're going to need a whole bunch of new storage, a whole bunch of new servers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. With us, all we had to do was assist them in, you know, the process of rolling out software to 100,000 laptops and, you know, and configuring and all of that, right? And they had a process in place. But the back end, because of us being cloud native, running as a service, the back end just happened, right? And so the customer was able to protect themselves against ransomware with minimal effort. And then the other story that came to mind is a customer who had already deployed us, and they actually did get a ransomware hit. I believe this is public on the website, but I won't mention the company name just in case it's not. But they had a ransomware hit, and we were able to help them identify that. We were able to very quickly, remediate the situation, make sure all of the files were back to where they were, sort of help them identify, you know, patient zero and all of that sort of stuff. And then as a result, A, they didn't have to pay any ransom, and B, they didn't lose any data, right? We definitely have,
right.
a number of stories that are like that. Yeah, so.
Excellent. That sounds wonderful. Now, I saw on your website that you received a Frost & Sullivan, I think, a claim award. Can you, about your unified cloud platform, can you describe that a little bit more detail for us?
Yeah, so they basically they were looking for, a product like us, that is scalable, that has a single product that backs up a number of different types of things, and has a single management console and all that kind of stuff. And basically we met the criteria better than all of the other products that were in the space, right? And one of the aspects was that it was a service, right? We have so we got that award. This was just a few months ago. I totally spaced myself here. But the
no problem. Take your time.
Yeah, go ahead. I was on my way somewhere and then lost my train of thought.
Well, if you come back to just jump
all
right in again, I'll continue the questions here. No problem. Hey, it happens. So now obviously there is a lot of other cybersecurity vendors out there, you know, like in California, on the East Coast, and Texas, and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
What separates Druva from the pack of the other cybersecurity vendors? What's that one brand, that one mark or trademark? What will separate you from the others and say, hey, I want to go to Druva?
Yeah, I'd say there's a couple of different things. I did regain my train of thought. It actually goes to this question as well. And that is that there are the biggest thing about us is that we are as a service, right? You know, one thing you could say is that we're cloud native, but cloud native is more sort of describing our back end than it is that's one of those sort of it's a feature, not a benefit kind of thing, right? Cloud native manifests itself in other things. But the as a service aspect of the product, I think, is the number one differentiator. There we have, and then I'll combine that with something else. We have some as a service competitors in one or two of the different places that we play, right? So there are, certainly when we start talking about laptop backup, there are a couple of different as-a-service products that are available where you don't, you know, you're going to back up directly to the cloud. You don't have to manage any backup servers. You can pay based on, purely based on number of seats that you're going to use. There's actually probably a whole bunch of companies in that space. Not a lot of them that play at the enterprise level, but there are a bunch of companies in that space. There are a couple of companies that do data center backup as a service. Again, that list is a lot smaller. Then there's one or two maybe three or four companies that provide service-based backup of cloud workloads, right? What we can't find is a company that does all of those as a service like we do. So if you're a company that is interested, you're interested in the as a service model, and I should come back, you know, I should talk about the challenges that the as a service model brings, because it's not for everybody. But if you're interested in the as a service model and you have endpoints and you have data centers and you have cloud workloads, we are the only company that can handle all of those with a single service, right?
Wow.
And so there are other companies, I'm not going to use any names, but there are other companies that are starting to use the, I think you'll start to see some of the more traditional products come out with as a service pricing. But it's interesting what some of the companies are doing, and they're saying, oh, we have an as a service product. And you'll find when you look, is when they say that, they have a tiny portion of their product that is offered as a service. And you'll find at least in two companies who I will not name, but their as a service feature is really just a management tool to manage their on-premises infrastructure, right? When we say as a service, the entire thing is as a service.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, I wanted to mention, you know, the as a service and direct to cloud model is not for everyone, right? There is, we have multi petabyte customers. We have double digit petabyte customers. So it's not that we can't handle tons of data, right? But if you have a high concentration of data in a single data center, and you combine that with not enough bandwidth to get it to us based on the, you know, it's a combination of, I have X number of petabytes of data. I change X percentage of that data every day, which means that, you know, X number of terabytes have to be transferred up the, you know, internet every day, and I have X number of megabits per second of bandwidth. There is a combination there that once you cross some threshold, backing up to us isn't going to work, right? We do have, some people think it's a lot lower than it is, and let me speak to that. There, we do have an optional product. I don't like calling it a product because we don't sell it. We have an optional offering that is a piece of software that can run in a server of your choice that, you know, that you buy, or a VM on site. And what it does is it acts as an on-site cache. We call it our cloud cache product, right? So, you know, we do have large companies that are backing up large data centers to us that then use cloud cache as a way to solve what many people see as the first challenge of cloud-based backup, and that is, what about recovery times, right? So if you're concerned about recovery times and you think you have enough data to warrant using cloud cache is available to you. It's free of charge. The only thing that we charge for when we're backing up data centers is the number of gigabytes that are stored in S3 after global deduplication.
Okay. Well, that's a good segue into my other question. Do you offer any free trials for your customers or free risk assessments before you onboard them onto your services?
So, yes. There is definitely a free trial on the NSYNC side of things. And I know that, you know, you have to deal with sales, right? So, obviously, the trial or the POC has a level of effort on our end, so we want to do some qualification and make sure that, you know, make sure that we're a fit before you even, you know, go through the effort, right? We're happy to help customers, you know, try it out. And the beautiful thing is, trying us out is a simple matter of installing an agent on a couple of laptops or pointing us, you know, giving us the authentication rights to talk directly to Office 365 or something. And then, you know, it's unlike, not anything else, but it's unlike most other products, right? We don't have to ship you anything. We don't have to, you don't have to configure any backup servers. You simply have to install a piece of software on a system somewhere.
Oh, that sounds
it's just a light,
yeah, you got a strong,
a lightweight agent, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like you have strong ease of use there for your customers, which is great. And I like things that are easy to use, especially in the cloud. Now, in that regard, do you have a partner program or even like a value-added reseller program to kind of help you branch out to your customers and for your sales programs?
The shorter answer is yes. We have a very, you know, I think the bulk of our data, or sorry, the bulk of our sales, I think at this point might be, and I'm somewhat talking out of school because it's not my area, but my understanding is, you know, the majority, or at least close to the majority of our sales are direct. But I know that a significant percentage of our sales are partner based. So yes.
Cool. Excellent. Now, let's just kind of segue now into the last part of the show here. We're going to be talking about cybersecurity in general. We keep hearing about nation-state threat actors like North Korea, China, Russia, you know, blah, blah, blah. What are your thoughts on that? You know, we got the midterms coming up here pretty soon, I think in the next few days or week or so. What are your thoughts just on these nation-state actors?
Just shut off the internet, man.
Well, yeah, I wish it was that easy. Done, but,
shut up all connections coming from Russia and China. I actually did that for a while with my website. I was receiving such a high degree of attacks, that some of which were being successful. This is many years ago, from Russia. And so I just cut off all. I just said, okay, nobody from Russia can use my site now because you people are
right. You're
killing me. Yeah, so that's my solution. Unfortunately, that's not very workable. You know, it's clear that it's happening. It's clear that it's both in terms of what we think in terms of traditional cybersecurity, in terms of, you know, like the hacks with the Chinese thing. It's just horrible, right? And sort of hacking of you know, this worry of, you know, actually logging in somehow and hacking systems that we traditionally think of as very secure, things like the election systems or the power grid, or that's, you know, that stuff's all happening, right? So I just hope and pray that the people whose job it is to protect us from all of that are doing their best. And then we have this other aspect, which is the social engineering aspect, and, you know, all these like stupid Facebook ads, or not ads, but posts, or, well, I guess some of them are ads. And what's annoying there is that they're actually on both sides, right? You know, this whole, the Russian hacking thing, what it was clear was that all they were doing was trying to make us all hate each other. And they did a pretty good job, unfortunately. And I think we're kind of damaged with that. And I think that the big thing there is we as the people, I think, have to, this isn't a political statement. We as a people have to, stop responding so easily to the, you know, the word link bait is coming to mind. I don't know if that's the right term, but, and realize that we are being attacked by other entities, and it is the goal of those entities to destabilize the United States, both digitally and socially.
That is a scary thought. So, well, let's go ahead and talk about something more happy here. what are your general plans for expansion for Druva? Are you going to be offering new services, new products, or are you just going to enter newer markets, or a mixture of both? Or
Yes, we're doing all of those things. I actually just sat on a call yesterday, you know, where I got the, you know, the latest briefing of the product direction for the next 18 months. So the answer is yes to all of those things, right? We'll be expanding the things like the number of the types of things that we back up, right? So, or the, either the types of things that we ingest, right? Because that's where the, you know, backup is the first piece, right? So if we don't have your data, we're not going to do anything else, right? So, you know, we're going to start doing, you know, handling more different data types. And then the next thing would be we're going to do more with that data once we have it. And I got to be very careful here because I saw a very forward-looking presentation. So that, you know, there are things, you know, one of the things that you'll hear us talk more about is once we have your data, what else can we do? I think a perfect example is that ransomware use case, right? Since we have all your data and since we can, we have this sort of unique vantage point of you know, seeing all of your data at one time, we have, we can see things that other applications might not see. So that's a perfect example of, you know, we have your data, so what cool stuff can we do? There are other things that we can do because we have all your data, and we are looking to add those things as well, right? You know, yeah, so A, handling different new data types, and B, doing more with that data once we have it.
Sounds excellent. Now, how do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing or evolving in the next couple of years? And how do you foresee Druva keeping up with all this? I mean, it seems like hardly one attack comes out, there are three different variants of it coming out the next day. I mean, it's quite challenging, I'm sure. It's got to be.
Yeah, I think, it starts with just, you just have to be ever vigilant, right, number one. And then the other thing is that, you know, I like our AWS partnership a lot, right? Amazon is not a perfect company, but they are a very big company, right? And by sort of riding their wave, we get to take advantage of a lot of things that they do, you know, and in this case, we're talking about cybersecurity, as they continue to protect all of their customers, we, being a very large customer, get to take advantage of that. Now, just to give you one example of a thing, a type of thing I'm talking about, this isn't a cybersecurity feature, but it gives you an idea of the kind of thing I'm talking about. So let me just think here. Guess what? I can't talk about it because it's not announced yet. So I was about to talk about an unannounced product. Let me give you a very generic version. Amazon came out with a new product. We are going to leverage that new it's an offering. We are going to leverage that new offering to make it easier to onboard customers, and it's going to make it much easier for new customers to come on board. And it's going to all be included as a part of, you know, it's already included as part of the service, no extra cost. But my point is, it all came about from Amazon's work, that they came out with, and then we just got to sort of leverage that.
Okay, I just want to ask like two follow-up questions here. It's not on the list I sent to you, but have you done any work with the Internet of Things? I mean, that's kind of like the big buzzword now, you know, all this connectivity, you know, and all the security. I find it to be scary. I find the IoT to be very scary. I'm just kind of wondering, does Druva, have you done any work with that yet? Or?
So we are, I am not aware of us, again, we're data protection, data management. Typically, IoT devices send their data to something else. You know, if you've got 1,000 cameras, those 1,000 cameras are going to send the video to somewhere. We'll protect the somewhere, generally speaking, not the IoT device itself.
Okay.
You know, that's, I'd say that's sort of a general statement. You know, who knows what may happen in the future? Like, an exception to that, for example, would be, you know, iPhones and Androids, right? Those are definitely, you know, can we call those IoT devices? They're not really IoT, but you know what I'm saying, right? They're tiny,
right,
relatively tiny little devices who also send their data to other places, but we do protect those, right? So, you know, but I think if I had to guess, our general approach would be, let's protect where those devices are sending data.
Okay. Now, in our show here, we've been talking a lot about, like, data leakage and compliance and so forth, and we know now that the C-suite, you know, the CIO, the CISO, CEO, they're trying to be held a lot more accountable by their boards, and, you know, there's been a lot of firings, fines, but what's in general, I know you're not, like, in a C-suite, but, like, what are your thoughts on holding the C-suite more responsible for data and protecting the company in general?
I think it's fabulous, right? I think that I can't preface because I already said it. I'll postface what I said in that. Just make sure that they understand that that's the case, right? So, like, you know, let's not change the rules on them per se, right? The reason why I say that is historically, CIOs and CEOs and CFOs have been held to kind of one standard, and that's the bottom line, right? And so when we talk about CIOs, if they've got signing authority, really the only thing that anybody would give them a hard time about is if they made a change that cost the company more money, right? But if we say, look, you're judged on more than just that, you're also judged on how well you protected your data, right? So let me give you a perfect example. One of the things that we come up against, right? So one of the services, as I mentioned, is that we back up Office 365, right? There is a feeling among some CIOs and others that say that the built-in protections in Office 365 are sufficient for them from, you know, to protect against all of the various threats to their data. And we're like, you know, I've been in backup for 25 years, and I just want to scream when I hear that, right? I'm just like, you've got to be kidding me, right? The list of bad actors, and, you know, and things that they can do to completely wipe out the entire communication system of your company, it is so long and so varied and so consistently changing that how could you possibly say that you don't need a third-party system to protect the data that's in Office 365 or G Suite? And yet there are – and so if – and that's – but that's an example of, like, well, the CIO said, well, we went to Office 365 to save money, and now you're telling me now that I'm on Office 365, I also need to back it up. I thought that was the reason we went to the cloud. And so that's an example of where sort of common sense and a lot of stuff that you're going to read will tell you, well, you really do need to protect your data, but then it goes directly against their bottom line. So that's sort of what I meant when I was saying that, you know, they need to understand that they'll be held to both of those standards.
Sure. Okay. Now, based on your experience in cybersecurity, what do you think the one biggest threat will be, like, next year in 2019?
AI.
Really? Can you elaborate more on that?
Yeah. Nope. I think that there is so much work going on in AI, It's like it's just literally the first thing that came to my mind when I heard the question, right? It's a little bit like, you know, in the robot world, you know, there's been these great videos from General Dynamics showing these ridiculously awesome robots that can, you know, jump over things and can walk independently up a hill, you know, a hill with rocks on it, and, you know, and they can open doors, and, you know, the videos I'm talking about, right? You've seen these,
right?
Okay. So when some of my friends look at that and they go, well, how long will it be before they train it to shoot a gun, right? That's the problem with technology. As AI takes off, I worry that AI is used as how soon, if it already hasn't been, actually it already has been, that AI is being used as a weapon, right? As a way to try, you know, just one stupid thing, right? You see these, I have a blog and I get comments on my blog. It is so obvious that so many of these attempted comments on my blog are just, they're written by an AI bot, right? So what happens when they get better at that? What happens when they're able to, you know, to make me or someone else think that they're talking to a real person? And I don't know. I just, I worry about, you know, I mean, I'm not quite like, you know, Terminator level of type stuff. I'm more worried about the kind of stuff that happened, you know, on Facebook and, you know, all of the, you know, once you have computers that can kind of think for themselves, the extent to which they can use that knowledge to attack us will go up astronomically, I think. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Well, I always thought that AI was always used, you know, for like helping the IT staff, like kind of automate their process and to kind of like help them project, you know, the model of the future threat landscape. So that's an interesting side that you pose about artificial intelligence.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be used for, but like everything else, right?
Right.
There is no such thing as a good piece of technology. There's only technology, and technology can be used for good or for evil. Sadly.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a scary thought there.
Yeah. Anyway, well, that's the world of cybersecurity. It's all about fear.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, as we close out our show, I just want to ask you one last question. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I keep getting asked, well, how do I protect myself? You're a cybersecurity professional. What tips do you give for the average business owner or just for the average American person out there walking the street? How do you protect yourself from cyber attacks, like from your iPhone, from phishing? You know, what are like the top two or three things you recommend to people?
Well, I'm going to sound like a broken record, but the first thing I do, you know, is I just make sure I have a solid data protection plan, right? I make sure that my laptop's backed up. I make sure my phone's backed up. I make sure that if something else I do is stupid, at least I'll be able to get my data back and I'm not paying ransomware to some random, you know, right? And then number two, my biggest thing is to I use a password manager, right? I happen to like Dashlane. It's not, you know, I just somehow I ended up at that versus some of the other more well-known products. But I was amazed that I have something like 250 internet accounts, right? Well, with Dashlane, I have 250 different internet passwords that I have no idea what they are, and it's a beautiful thing now when I get a notification that Yahoo has been attacked again, right? That's not something new. I'm just there were
right.
So many breaches in a row, right? So I just literally for a large set of internet services, they just have a change password button. And I just push that button and they actually automate going in and changing the password. Oh. I don't even have to do anything. It's for a small subset, but you know, it's for some of the big ones, right? So literally I get right. any sort of whiff of there's any sort of hack and I just change my password and it doesn't change my process one bit, right? And so I have a different password everywhere I go. And I think that like the only password that I know by heart is my Apple password. And it's only because I have to enter it so many freaking times, because I have an iPhone.
I can't remember my password for the life of me. It's like the one password I just can't remember. I don't know why, but anyway.
excuse me. My point was that's my big thing is that I limit my exposure, right?
Gotcha.
By making sure that all my different accounts are unique.
Sounds excellent. Well, Curtis, thank you for your time on this weekend. Hope we can join you again for another podcast. And once again, thanks so much for your time.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Take care. Have a good weekend.
Thanks.